you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show. And Caroline is in India, so this is a read broadcast.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So before I bring in our fantastic guest, Yahya Lababidi, wonderful Egyptian-American poet, just a little weaving of context. So as Saturn and Uranus glide into trine, it will be exact at 4:41 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, 'tis truly the birth of Wolf-Oti, the wolf-coyote combo, metaphorically providing a supportive wolf pack that encourages our wild, wily bodhisattva coyote. It's a great opportunity as we deepen our diversification inwardly, Saturn. It strengthens our signal, to calibrate the quality of serendipitous synchronicity, Uranus personally and collectively. So Catharsis on the Mall is coming to Washington, D.C. this Friday through Saturday. It's Burning Man comes to D.C. Sure, we need all the help we can get. You know, it's catharsis does mean a bodily purging, so it might be messy, but it's also from Greek catharsis to pure, clear out dirt and shame, and we go, all right, that's perfect enough. As Jupiter and Neptune trine, we say all news is mythic and all poetry be news. The headlines are now poetic aphorisms. Transvestite defeats homophobe, deftly deflects darkness. So it's perfect to host our great poet, maestro, Yahya Lababidi. We host the return after so many adventures, Egypt, hurricanes, Texas, of Yahya Lababidi. Salvation lies on the other side of danger. I hope I quoted that right. And then from his publisher, Egyptian-American thinker, poet, and author of 7 books in 4 genres, Yahya Lababidi's forthcoming book, Where Epics Fail, was featured on PBS NewsHour and is generously endorsed by Obama's inaugural poet, Richard Blanco. Epics is to be published by Unbound in partnership with Penguin Random House and is currently available for pre-order. Prior to that, Lababidi's Balancing Acts, New and Selected Poems, debuted on Amazon's Hot New Releases. His work has appeared on NPR, Best American Poetry, On Being with Krista Tippett. He has participated in international poetry festivals throughout the USA, Eastern Europe, as well as the Middle East. Twice nominated for a Pushcart Prize, his writing has been translated into several languages, including Arabic, Hebrew, Slovak, Spanish, French, Italian, German, Dutch, and Swedish. We'll be referencing a fantastic article he wrote as he was guest editing World Literature Today, Seeking Light Through Literature. So welcome, fellow Libran, Moon, and Virgo, Yahya.
How are you doing, Caroline? Good to be back. There was a lot of chewy goodness in that introduction. Past Yahya Lababidi, the headlines and such, I wanted to jump in, but I had to restrain myself.
Oh, no, that's great. No, it is so tasty. And I listening to your presentation in Austin, which we've posted all over the memesphere on Twitter and Facebook and on my website, coyotenetworknews.com. It's really great. And it just reminded me of just how I treasure your aphorisms and yourself and are wonderful. And just, you know, when we hosted you on June 8th, just we want to say a little hello from Diana and Gustavo's tree that you brought.
It's a pleasure. I can't believe it's been only June 8th and already June 8th at the same time. So much seems to have taken place since then, in the inner world and the outer world. But yes, it's good to check in again and catch up.
It is. Well, the last time we were cahooting, and now we're publicly cahooting, was when I was texting you going, what are you doing in Miami as the hurricane's approaching? You're going to fear the greatest danger of all, which is the wrath of your beautiful wife, Diana. What were you doing there?
I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't know if I could bring up the fact that you were there checking in on me throughout the hurricane, and I'm so grateful for that because, you know, desert boy from Egypt knows nothing about water and well, I know wind and I know sand, but water, I don't understand. And so that really was a bizarre experience. We're very fortunate to have been spared in Fort Lauderdale the way we were, but it was really thanks to kind folks like you popping in and saying, it's going to be okay. How are you doing now? What do you have? What are you doing? What's it look like now? That made the whole thing more bearable and easy to, because I had been warned, as I mentioned, I had been forewarned there's a hurricane coming. And I thought, no, I need to go back for my quiet space in Florida. My quiet space turns out to be Irma approaching.
Right, and then just another quirky connection. And when I was in Egypt, and we'll talk about your trip, but in March and April, our wonderful guide Hani, and right before all that, he said, "Oh, it's such great! My wonderful, beautiful, incredibly talented, fabulous daughter just got a scholarship, and she moved to Sarasota, Florida, and she's there right now." And I'm like, "Oh my God, here goes another Egyptian subject to hurricanes," but also came out okay. So, yes, and you speak of the metaphysics of love and beauty, and I want to honor many things, the aphorisms, because I was like, oh, so tasty, so tasty, so delicious. So any aphorisms you want to share, and then I'd love to go through the article that you wrote, because every line is, it's been said that eloquence is the poetry of prose, so your prose is really good.
Oh, you're very kind. I mean, the subject lends poetry to the prose, but I'll start with aphorisms. I don't know. Let me read a few, maybe, and then you'll give me a signal. So, aphorisms: respect the wisdom of silence by disturbing it briefly. To write is to bow, is to pray. There are many ways to donate blood. Writing is one. And I'll pause now for you to jump in if you like.
Oh, well, I just want to honor and amplify because the way you introduced it in Austin, Texas, fabulous video, is aphorisms. You know, you grew up in Egypt, which is a culture of witty, wise one-liners, right?
They speak in aphorisms. I had grandmothers on either end, paternal and maternal, who could conduct entire conversations in sing-songy aphorisms. And at some point, I tried my hand at it by way of people like Nietzsche and Wilde. And now it seems like the natural way to speak to oneself, to overhear oneself, to quote oneself, and to speak to others in turn.
Yes. No. And it is. And I realize I have aphorisms. I do. Because it's a catalyst.
You speak in them too.
Well, there's moon, there's sun in Libra, moon in Virgo. We are both that, born at dark of moon. Again, beauty with standards and deftness and Hermes. And I love, as you are also incarnation of Hermes or an agent of Hermes. In Greece, they said they were comfortable, ancient Greece, with silence because the thought was the next voice to speak would be Hermes.
Love that. Yeah, silence is tremendous. I have an
Neptune trine, we say all news is mythic and all poetry be news. The headlines are now poetic aphorisms. Transvestite defeats homophobe, deftly deflects darkness. So it's perfect to host our great poet, maestro Yahya Lababidi. We host the return after so many adventures, Egypt, hurricanes, Texas, of Yahya Labbabidi, Salvation Lies on the Other Side of Danger. I hope I quoted that right. And then from his publisher, Egyptian-American thinker, poet, and author of 7 books in 4 genres, Yahya Labbabidi's forthcoming book, Where Epics Fail, was featured on PBS NewsHour and is generously endorsed by Obama's inaugural poet, Richard Blanco. Epics is to be published by Unbound in partnership with Penguin Random House and is currently available for pre-order. Prior to that, Labbabidi's Balancing Acts, New and Selected Poems debuted on Amazon's Hot New Releases. His work has appeared on NPR, Best American Poetry, On Being with Krista Tippett. He has participated in international poetry festivals throughout the USA, Eastern Europe, as well as the Middle East. Twice nominated for a Pushcart Prize, his writing has been translated into several languages, including Arabic, Hebrew, Slovak, Spanish, French, Italian, German, Dutch, and Swedish. We'll be referencing a fantastic article he wrote as he was guest editing World Literature Today, Seeking Light Through Literature. So welcome, fellow Libran, Moon, and Virgo, Yahya.
How are you doing, Caroline? Good to be back. There was a lot of chewiness in that introduction. Past Yahya Labbabidi, the headlines and such, I wanted to jump in, but I had to restrain myself.
Oh, no, that's great. No, it is so tasty. And I listening to your presentation in Austin, which we've posted all over the memesphere on Twitter and Facebook and on my website, coyotenetworknews.com. It's really great. And it just reminded me of just how I treasure your aphorisms and yourself and are wonderful. And just, you know, when we hosted you on June 8th, just we wanted to say a little hello from Diana and Gustavo's tree that you brought.
It's a pleasure. I can't believe it's been only June 8th and already June 8th at the same time. So much seems to have taken place since then in the inner world and the outer world. But yes, it's good to check in again and catch up.
It is. Well, the last time we were cahooting, and now we're publicly cahooting, was when I was texting you going, what are you doing in Miami as the hurricane's approaching? You're going to fear the greatest danger of all, which is the wrath of your beautiful wife, Diana. Right? What were you doing there?
I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't know if I could bring up the fact that you were there checking in on me throughout the hurricane, and I'm so grateful for that because, you know, desert boy from Egypt knows nothing about water and well, I know wind and I know sand, but water, I don't understand. And so that really was a bizarre experience. We're very fortunate to have been spared in Fort Lauderdale the way we were, but it was really thanks to kind folks like you popping in and saying, it's going to be okay. How are you doing now? What do you have? What are you doing? What's it look like now? That made the whole thing more bearable and easy to, because I had been warned, as I mentioned, I had been forewarned there's a hurricane coming. And I thought, no, I need to go back for my quiet space in Florida. My quiet space turns out to be Irma approaching.
Right, and then just another quirky connection. And when I was in Egypt, and we'll talk about your trip, but in March and April, our wonderful guide, Hani, and right before all that, he said, oh, it's so great. My wonderful, beautiful, incredibly talented, fabulous daughter just got a scholarship, and she moved to Sarasota, Florida, and she's there right now. And I'm like, oh, my God, here goes another Egyptian subject to hurricanes, but also came out okay. So, yes, and you speak of the metaphysics of love and beauty, and I want to honor many things, the aphorisms, because I was like, oh, so tasty, so tasty, so delicious. So any aphorisms you want to share, and then I'd love to go through the article that you wrote, because every line is, it's been said that eloquence is the poetry of prose, so your prose is really good.
Oh, you're very kind. I mean, the subject lends poetry. Poetry to the prose, but I'll start with aphorisms. I don't know. Let me read a few, maybe, and then you'll give me a signal. So, aphorisms: respect the wisdom of silence by disturbing it briefly. To write is to bow, is to pray. There are many ways to donate blood. Writing is one. And I'll pause now for you to jump in if you like.
Oh, well, I just want to honor and amplify because the way you introduced it in Austin, Texas, fabulous video, is aphorisms. You know, you grew up in Egypt, which is a culture of witty, wise one-liners, right?
They speak so, in aphorisms. I had grandmothers on either end, paternal and maternal, who could conduct entire conversations in sing-songy aphorisms. And at some point, I tried my hand at it by way of people like Nietzsche and Wilde, and now it seems like the natural way to speak to oneself, to overhear oneself, to quote oneself, and to speak to others in turn.
Yes. No. And it is. And I realize I have aphorisms. I do. And because it's a catalyst.
You speak in them too.
Well, there's moon, there's sun in Libra, moon in Virgo. We are both that, born at dark of moon. Again, beauty with standards and deftness and Hermes. And I love, as you are also incarnation of Hermes or an agent of Hermes. In Greece, they said they were comfortable, ancient Greece, with silence because the thought was the next voice to speak would be Hermes.
Mm.
Love that.
Yeah, silence is tremendous. I have an app. It's tremendous. I have an aphorism which I'm going to misquote, but it goes something like, there's nothing like conversation except silence, because of course all good conversation comes from good silences. So there's that deep respect for the capital of riches where all eloquence comes from.
And of course, in the wonderful movie, I love it so much, Life is Beautiful, there's a riddle master, and he says,
It's tremendous. I have an aphorism which I'm going to misquote, but it goes something like, there's nothing like conversation except silence, because of course all good conversation comes from good silences. So there's that deep respect for the capital of riches where all eloquence comes from.
And of course, in the wonderful movie, I love it so much, Life is Beautiful, there's a riddle master, and he says, what is it that once you speak its name, it is gone? And he says, silencio.
Yes. And riddle masters already very good. To aspire to be a riddle master, there's an aphorism I have. Some point of using it as a title for the book, and the aphorism is, the guardian of the riddle must also speak in riddles.
Oh, I want to. Yes, no. Each one of these is if we want to take it back into our cave and feast on it. You know, because and then I'm just going to feed you back to you so we can play. You know, but I think and possibly misquoting because I was scribbling as I was watching the video. What is worth quoting from the dialogue with. From the dialogue with the soul, help me with that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tried to come up with a neat aphoristic definition of what aphorisms are, and I thought we all go around speaking to ourselves all the time, whether we identify as writers or talkers or something in between. But aphorisms somehow are what's worth quoting from the soul's dialogue with itself. So every once in a while, after a long, rambling conversation that may have lasted decades, you'll think, there's the line worth sharing. That's it. That encapsulates everything. To it their own life.
Oh, and you know it's because I have always the astro mythic map of now and so making such a welcoming then you nest for yourself. So the image, whoops, just reaching for this book, the image for Venus in Scorpio, right next to Jupiter in Scorpio, the revelation of hidden wealth, and its image is a youth carries a lit candle in a ritual, melding one's energy in a deeper matrix, passing on the light, overcomes fear of about one's own flame going out.
Very nice. Ooh. Very nice.
Well, that's just the Sabian... That's just the Sabian symbol that humans made up, you know, but for that degree of the zodiac, and we go, ooh, we love that.
You said that, and by association, I thought of a Sufi aphorism along the lines of, the candle is not there for itself. It's not there to light the way for itself. And there's something to be said for that.
You dance in your really great... essay, Seeking the Light Through Literature, in the edition of World Literature Today that you guest edited, which is great. And you like the transvestite who defeated the homophobe, definitely deflect.
Tell me again about that. Say that slowly so I can wrap my mind around it, because it's quite a title. What exactly
is it? It's a true thing, and I'm going to forget Danica's last name, but there was hearteningness. We can compost our cynicism and go, no, the switch on Tuesday night. All white Republican grumpy guys to this, you know, many women.
Oh, I see, yes.
So many women.
Now I know what you're talking about.
And in Virginia, the beautiful transvestite, Danica, won and defeated somebody who proudly proclaimed himself as, I'm the biggest homophobe in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And when she was asked, like, you know, what about your terrible opponent? She's like, no. I want to concentrate on what we want to do together.
You know what it is? You know, I hear this title, and if I were apolitical, which no one can afford to be, but if I hear this title, I think of how rigid, and certainly anything that defines itself as opposed to. So that's how I hear that. So substitute transgender with a fluid, and substitute whatever else with opposed to. You know, that's no good.
Great. Well, yeah, and metaphor means to carry across, and we're especially in a time right now which so welcomes you and the part of you in all of us. Jupiter is stories, Neptune is dreams and vision, and everything that has ever in human history moved humans to the goodness and conscious kinship, and they're trying to help our rogue species, going, yes, metaphor, story, welcome. And yeah, so it's a shape-shifting time, and so it's true, transgender is not a beautiful word. It's not as beautiful as the reality, you know, border crossing, cross-pollinating, shape-shifting being, you know, composts rigidity, or I'll hand it to you to, we can refine that thing more, but yes, absolutely, you know, liberating
words. I like what you said. I'm jotting this down, because every time I so dense that one has to at least get some of this stuff that's flying through the air, you know, catch it in some sort of net so that they can, you know, mull on it later. But I like metaphor, how you unpack metaphor and the etymology of metaphor, and by association, because I think in these aphorism-like quotes, I think of Borges, who says that censorship is the mother of metaphor, and how that must also be connected. You know, I come from a culture where people, censorship, he says, is the mother of metaphor. And I think of this immediately, of course, as an Egyptian, where we're not allowed to say or do by the powers that be. And so as a result, we're very inventive. We have to be very creative in sidestepping the big marching boot. And so it's interesting that metaphor should mean to carry across, because metaphor has to be nimble like a dancer.
That's great. Yes, every word you say, there's eight directions to go in. We go, oh, that's great. Right, because I started to interrupt you, and then I was like, no, wait. Oh, there we go. Censorship is the mother of metaphor,
yeah.
The inventive agility. And, you know, as we get to, you know, I like to say... no prison for the unexpected, which is like that again. Let us all be deft and, you know, assume cultural narrative lead by shape-shifting language. And, you know, there's an article I keep out that, again, I keep meaning to finish reading it, but it's so distressing. It's about the rounding up of all gay people in Egypt.
That's the real problem. I don't know who I was talking to, because I've spoken to more people than I'm used to, as the hermit. Were in Egypt, and now they're leaving Egypt, and I asked them, does it have anything to do with the government clamping down? Because I know recently that's something that I don't even want to start with Sisi and current government, but I know that's something that they've made a very showy, loud point of clamping down on. It's one of those things where they're aware of, it's part of the culture, it exists, but it's not blatant. It's sort of just under the radar, and it's tolerated, and it's known, and it is what it is. And then at some point, every once in a while, you have these very flamboyant statements that the governments will make, and this particular government is trying to say, oh, you know, we are the moral police here. And that was one of the things, one of the ways they chose to manifest by clamping down, but in a really serious way, on what they felt was any kind of gatherings or this kind of thing. So can I say it's unfortunate what's happening in Egypt, but being there in the capacity that I was as a tourist, really, I wasn't able to kind of tease out all these, you know, deep contradictions and problems that they have. I just thought, oh, it still exists. It's like I'd left the room and I'd come back just moments later, it's still there.
Your motherland.
Yes, my motherland, where I was born and raised, and for some reason, I had a great psychological barrier for nearly 12 years that I couldn't fathom returning there, because I just couldn't clear that barrier. In fact, the last time I was talking to you, I was probably pining and fantasizing when and how would I ever make it back, and especially knowing that you're susceptible, I thought we should plan something together, you know, just to kind of tease me into that situation. And then at some point, however these things happened, something shifted, and I thought, okay, now. And I acted on that, and it was a blessed trip. It was the first time I take my wife there, who's been asking to go before she was my wife.
I like to think I was a small catalyst.
You must have been. Are you kidding me? You must have been. So, your interest, your active commitment to the cause, walking into your magical home and seeing all the symbols, the winks and nudges that said, you must go. You don't know it now, but you shall go. This is your first step on the path. You are going.
that's great. And then also just in the beautiful, you know, the all of creation, the mimosphere is comprised of poetry, really, in the poetic language of astrology. And Jupiter, which is the storytelling blessing, we want to get to those guys, blessing intelligence, has a cycle of 12 years, right?
So you might
shapeshift. You're like, oh, there was a barrier. And it's like, no, you had a journey to complete, and then the circle was struck by lightning and became a spiral, and off you went.
Yeah, no, so, I believe in timing. I think everything's timing. Love is timing. Growth is timing. Transformation. Everything is timing. And it seemed to be the right time. Everything is timing, and it seemed to be the right time. On a very practical, banal level, I was thinking, yeah, you know, my parents aren't getting any younger. It's about time, kind of thing. And at the same time, you know, Egypt is beyond the colossal smallnesses that these little dictators heap upon it. The Egyptian soul cannot be tainted or touched essentially by all this political nonsense. They are who they are, and talk about shapeshifters and talk about fluidity and flexibility and adapting to the impossible. That's what they do for just to stay alive.
Yes. And then you also, in your article, have many great leading quotes, so many that we want to pore over, really. But you say, I guess it's Karen Armstrong, says the word mythos comes from the Greek word, which means to close the mouth or yes. close the eyes.
Yes, yeah, I thought that was. I wanted, I mean, if you allow me, I could maybe read just for a minute or two from that opening introductory essay. The piece, the cover story for World Literature Today for the November issue is titled Belief in an Age of Intolerance. I don't need to explain to anyone that we live in an age of intolerance. Maybe belief is the queer term that we might explore. But I thought for this issue, I would bring as many voices as possible. And that's why I open with Karen Armstrong. And that's why I open with a rabbi. And then we have in the virtual issue, we have Hamza Youssef, who's the most eloquent Muslim scholar that I'm aware of. But it was an occasion to bring in old friends that had shaped me as a child and shaped many other people, like Bly and Rumi, yeah. and translations of Rumi, new translations of Rumi, and Stephen Mitchell, whose Tao Te Ching and Rilke were again transformative. So I was really privileged to be in that situation to just bring in these people and say, remind us again of all the good out there. Remind us again.
Beautiful. Yes, absolutely. Read on. Your voice, your words are fantastic transmissions.
All right. Sure, so I'll give you a minute or two's worth of this essay. So this is my introductory essay to all of these giants that I was privileged to sort of marshal into telling their stories along the way. And the title of my piece is called Seeking the Light Through Literature. The human heart abhors a vacuum. With organized religion losing ground, all sorts of substitutes rush in. Is how we pray now. In these skeptical times, there still exists an absolute literature, in the coinage of Italian writer Roberto Calasso, where we might discern the divine voice. Such pre- and post-religious literature shares aims and concerns similar to belief systems, such as sharpening our attention, cultivating a sense of awe, offering us, granting us a chance at transcendence. And in closing, I'll just jumping around here, amid the cultural wars dominating the headlines and the airwaves, prayerful prose or poetry and mystic art, because there's a lot of art also in this issue that I brought in, just to show how visuals can take us there, grant us the opportunity to share the good news or make a joyful noise. One way of doing so is giving thanks, even in the midst of suffering, trying to praise the mutilated world. And here's just a couple of lines from a poem. In a hymn of a poem, brief for the defense, Jack Gilbert urges, we must have the stubbornness to accept our gladness in the ruthless furnace of this world. To make injustice the only measure of our attention is to praise the devil.
Whoa.
You know?
That's so great.
Because there's the news that doesn't let up. Story, but it's not the whole story.
Right. I don't know if you know a wonderful book called Finite and Infinite Games by James Kars.
No, I'm writing it down now.
It's really worthy. And even just on the cover, and a wonderful ally gave it to me years ago, it's been central right here on my bookshelf. On the cover it says, a finite game is about winning, an infinite game is about keeping everything in play.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and he says that, well, he says what you're quoting, Jack Gilbert, he says the Renaissance was not primarily against. And he says it's a dodgy, tricky thing, but we like dodgy, tricky things. You know, when artists define themselves primarily as against, they surrender their infinite powers and are constrained by the finite game.
You bring many things to mind, as usual. So the first thing that you bring to mind is the last time we spoke, I'd said something about speaking truth to power. There was an anthology that I was part of. Cutthroat Journal was getting writers to speak up against, this is the time of the Trump, whatever it's called, Trump, let's say, election, we'll call it that. And writers were bearing witness on what they thought was a travesty. And I remember telling you this formulation of speaking truth to power, and I may have been off radio, and you looked at me and gave me one of those looks, and you said, but why say that they have the power? And I'm paraphrasing here. And I really stayed with that. Why say that it's the poet is speaking truth to power? Why isn't the poet the one with the power? So what
oh, but
example?
Here's... But here's my aphorism too, which is just one little word switch: speak truth, be power.
Yes, I think that's what
right.
you told me. I think that is.
I always carry it in my pocket, right?
And
so
it was a
yeah.
little key. You turned a little key, and even in that formulation, which I thought was noble, of you know the artist as witness and activist and artivist and whatever else you like. I thought, you know, why? Yeah, why assume that their power? These goons with their. With their failed imagination, surely, at least in the formulations, we can do better. We can do better. And the other thing, of course, you bring up is this idea when you say keep everything in play is the importance of play. And I'm thinking now of Thomas Merton, who's another hero of mine, and this idea of there being something of a failure about wars. Because there's a tragic seriousness. If one were really to keep everything in play, and if one were to play wisely and divinely, then you would not allow yourself to stoop to these levels of the tragic seriousness of war that he talks about and all
great.
The other.
No, that's great. We're going to take a very short break, our usual Taj Mahal. Our wonderful guest is Yahya Lababidi, a fantastic poet, aphorism maestro. And I have another aphorism lined up to pitch to you when we get back, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them across his eyes. She shot and made his tallest cry.
I'll get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. And I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, our splendiferous ally, poet, Egyptian poet guest is Yahya Lababidi. And just a little shout out, if you're in Washington, D.C., Burning Man is coming to Washington, D.C. this weekend. Oh, catharsis on the Mall. It's a dedicated ritual. There's going to be a giant dragon that goes by the Capitol and the Washington Monument and all kinds. So there's that, catharsisonthemall.com. But how can people best buy your books or reach you? What is the best link for you?
Well, since you were kind enough to mention where epics fail, if your listeners can just type that in, just type where epics fail, I think they will be able to come to the main page and just basically pre-order. And if they can remember my last name and punch that in alongside where epics fail, then that works too. But there's still a chance, I think, before the end of the year for whoever pre-orders it to be included in the book. They're using this sort of old-fashioned way of publishing, which is actually a new way, the old and the new collapsing, of having the reader as patron. So whoever pledges will be included in the hardcover, the limited edition of 500 hardcover books, and then after that, Penguin does the trade edition. So just punch it into some... Where Epics Fail by Yahya Lababidi, and you're welcome to pre-order it, and I'm grateful for your interest.
I'm going to do it immediately when we hang up here. That's great. So in our aphorism fest, we were just doing, rather than, speak truth to power, which is still like, I think it's just kind of unresolved issues with daddy, like, power somewhere else. And then speak truth, be power. And then, aspiring to live up to my own dedication. I used to say, but where's your completion thing, Caroline? And so I go, if all war is a failure of imagination, then all peace is a triumph of imagination.
Yeah, that's nice.
They're happier. They're happier
that's
together.
Nice. Oh, you like the symmetry of it, huh? That's the Libra. You want both sides balanced.
Well, not exactly. I want, I like to also, periodically harumph, critique without vision is complicitous with dominance. Yeah, it's kind of what you're just saying, to just bang the drum of the horrible is horrible. Arousal, first step on the journey. And then if we take our fist and then unfurl it and blow muti or blessing, it's like woof, woof. May you be liberated from your own ding battery or whatever it is, and send it out there. So I do think it's part of my kind of trickster dynamic, which is critique with vision. And they need each other.
Not even an alternative, but just something alongside the critique, not just critique for critiquing's sake. Furling. There's a line by James Lowe, who's been putting out, now he's putting out a second collection of modern aphorists, living aphorists, and one of his own aphorisms is something, and forgive me, James, if I paraphrase, but he says that we are a clenched fist in moving water. And this idea of the clenched fist, open up and let the water swim through your fingers. The clenched fist is good only up to a point.
Right, and that goes very well with one of your aphorisms, in the deep end, every stroke counts.
If this is not the deep end, I don't know what is.
No, we're in the deep end. But again, see, it's wonderful because it's... what you're doing and dedicated is you're painting reality with words, right? And so in the deep end, every stroke counts. We're right there. We are right there. We are right in the deep end water with you. Every stroke counts. And then that goes very well with James Lowe. We are a clenched fist in moving water. It's like, no, if you're in the deep end, you can't swim with clenched fists.
No, you can't. You absolutely can't. Thank you. Yeah, I didn't even think of putting those two together. But
they work really well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was scribbling like yourself, did you say salvation is on the other side? You say salvation is on the other side of danger?
It is, but I even say it's on the other side of our gravest danger. It's when the danger is most acute. It's our particular danger, whether that danger be intolerance or what, fill in the blank. It's that particular danger. It's where there are demons that there is something precious worth fighting for. And the challenge is, I guess, to sort of see in that particular darkness the opening, how you can sort of move through it, not even avoid it, but actually look the beast in the eye and tickle their nose somehow.
Oh, definitely. No, it's our trickster alliance.
Yeah.
Demon is where there is... Wait, say it again. There is... Wait.
So where there are demons. On the other side of our gravest danger is one, and then another one is where there are as an American, for example, if we're going to be Americans, which we also are, and say this is a defining moment. How can one take this coarsening of the blood, this heart attack in the making, and just turn it around and say, no, this is not who we are. We are better than this. We have behaved otherwise. We have been otherwise. How can we take this moment too and make it otherwise to represent what we feel to be our better angels?
Right, and I do love...
That too.
I find it charming, but back to the onward to the deeper thing. So that's great. Salvation lies on the other side of our gravest danger.
Yeah,
that's really good.
Because you think that'll win, but it's actually it's that very thing that might save you if you just know how to approach it. Rilke speaks of this. He talks about the dragons in our life, and again, I'm paraphrasing because it's been a bit with Rilke. But he says, maybe if for once you were to show these dragons, maybe they're princesses, he says. Maybe these dragons are princesses. And if you were to show them that you were chivalrous and brave and noble, they would revert. They wouldn't be so menacing. So this is a call for nobility and courage. And that's not what the alarmist...
danger.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Because you think that'll win, but it's actually, it's that very thing that might save you if you just know how to approach it. Rilke speaks of this. He talks about the dragons in our life, and again, I'm paraphrasing because it's been a bit with Rilke, but he says, maybe if for once you were to show these dragons, maybe they're princesses, he says. Maybe these dragons are princesses, and if you were to show them that you were chivalrous and brave and noble, they would revert. They wouldn't be so menacing. So this is a call for nobility and courage, and that's not what the alarmist news is calling for.
No, right, the alarmist news, all news and distraction, right, because I say often, but I did peek onto my... seatmate on a plane's video computer screen when he got up to go pee, and it was a big deal media guy, clearly, or a medium middle level management media guy, and the edict coming down from on high, I got to spy, said, in the reporting of all stories, eliminate subtlety and increase urgency. That's the backstage thing, but Right. So there's so many places to go. I'm just stopping with the salvation. Oh, I know. The salvation lies on the other side of our gravest danger. And so part of what I've been working with myself and others is just lest we get stuck in which people are talking about their trauma. And as wise radio guest Rachel Harris said, you can't make people do something too soon. But I go, right. But I've been suggesting to myself and others that we replace the word trauma with the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment.
Beautiful.
Because it really
That's
is,
very nice.
You know, redemption lies in brewing medicine for others, right?
Yeah.
And it gives it nobility and purpose and a generous contribution to those who may have to undergo a similar thing.
A beautiful assignment. That's a lovely way of putting it. That is required of all of us to somehow lead a life of service, whether it's what you do on the radio, whether it's someone going the extra mile for their neighbor or speaking up when it's easier to slink away. But that's just really it. It's about service and doing most cases what is more difficult.
Well, and that's where in our texting back and forth, but during as the hurricane was apparently descending on you, but you did say, you know, but I'm also staying here for my elderly neighbor who won't go, and that's when I was like, oh, all right,
yeah,
all right,
yeah.
As long as you have hummus, and you assured me that you had hummus.
Yes, the hummus saw me through. And I had good neighbors. In fact, one of the neighbors, I'm speaking from her apartment now, because she said, you know, come, go over there, you'll have the whole place to yourself, I'll be in the gym. And she was the one who was throwing hurricane parties and assuring me it's going to be all right. And we were dancing and, you know, cheering and through it all, it was, I think it was just that. It was just people looking out for one another. And I had another neighbor on another floor who was 90 or 90 plus, and he really doesn't have anyone to look after him. And he didn't even know fully what was going on because he has dementia. So, yeah, no, I think it's, what is it? Ram Dass says, we're walking each other home. We're all sort of along the way, you know, just if you can extend a hand to someone. And we're all sort of along the way, you know, just if you can extend a hand to someone and maybe pass the neighbor, if you can view even your so-called enemy as a possible neighbor and say, oh, no, I think you might have misunderstood. This is how it can also be viewed, whatever it is that you're terribly afraid of.
Yeah, well, our dangerous, beautiful assignment, it's like the deep end, and it's, and then I just put to you, you know, because language is magic and invocative, and we do want to expand our vocabulary and expand our intimacy with the world as we do that, so... there is a default setting of fight used so often, you know, even where there are demons is where there is something precious worth fighting for, and we go, and I realized it we're not quite at the point where we could say where there are demons is where there's something precious worth dancing.
It doesn't quite convey.
I understand we're in a middle ground where, you know, and I'm not going to wag my finger at effective people, you know, Bernie Sanders and 350.org and stuff, because they're all fight. We got to fight for peace and fight
right.
for this. And it's like, all right, you guys can do that. But
yeah,
it would be
no, I hear you. I never can. Can I tell you? One is so embroiled in the moment, even when they think they're not, that I didn't realize that those two were fighting words. Because I am sensitive to things like, you know, the war against women or the war against drugs or the war. I'm thinking, why war? You know, why not? Another way, you know, the hard look, or even a soft look, or the playful look, or the come on, are you serious look? But yeah, no, the fight has to be in a period when unfortunately, your not even your opponent, your dance partner, doesn't quite realizing that you're on the dance floor. They still want to drag you out to the parking lot to clobber you. And that's when you have to remind them, no, we're on a dance floor. Let's dance this off if possible.
And that's why capoeira is so fabulous. I admire it. I don't think I can do it exactly. But, the British, Brazilian martial art, again, Mars and Venus go very well together, where you are in a circle and there's fantastic music, the birimbau, and you have an opponent, right? Mm-hmm. But it's very witty. You never take your eyes off your opponent, but you do cartwheels and tag them and whatever, and the drumming is going and the birimbau is going, and it's a container in which polarity is resolved.
I think that's beautiful that you even mentioned wit for whatever, however people hear wit. With Nietzsche, it was
tag them and whatever, and the drumming is going and the birimbau is going, and it's a container in which polarity is resolved.
I think that's beautiful that you even mentioned wit for whatever, however people hear wit. With Nietzsche, it was light feet. And I think utopia, at some point I define utopia to myself as a world where the only terrorists are artists. If we can keep it to that level, where it's just an idea, a revolutionary idea, a society rattling idea, but none of this unimaginative nonsense that requires us all to reduce our game. Let's keep the thing elevated.
Then I want to play with that word too. May all terrorists be terrorists, T-E-R-R-A. I think it's a swooshy time, of blessing, and we can go back to that, and also in your article, one of Robert Bly's translations of Rumi was, your depression is caused by your inability to praise. A man who is depressed is a thief and steals from God every moment.
Beautiful. And beautiful. It's things like that I wanted him in that issue.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Right, and he's off in the memosphere, blessed great ally. But once when I posted that, with attribution, of course, some people got very grumpy. Some people got very grumpy about their trauma, right? Going, it's just one story.
Yeah.
You can have one story and you can have other stories. May we prime the pump of stories going, that's one thought, and may it inspire people's, rejoinders or whatever the things in an artful way.
Yeah.
So it's also, I love the utopian Fourier in
Now you remind me of a time that I posted something and I got grumpy responses from unlikely corners. It was something to do with Kafka, and he had been persuaded to psychoanalysis, and he said never again. This is one of sort of the private Kafka, if there is a public one. And
Thank you. boys and girls. This is Chris Welch inviting you to join me every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 11 a.m. to noon for the Talkies. We'll discuss almost everything. The news, of course, and also theater, music, books, generally what's happening in our own backyard and what we can do about it. Your questions and comments are a vital part of the proceedings. That's the Talkies, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, 11 a.m. to noon on KPFA.
You're invited to raise your voice, rouse your body, and move to the groove with Artists for Humanity on Sunday, January 28th at Ashkenaz Center in Berkeley. This cultural jamboree will feature live music by jazz band Humanistic, as well as poetry by local activist Penny Opal Plant. Closing the show is an adventure in dance, rhythm, and expression with the group Dance Chant. This wheelchair-accessible event is a benefit for Bay Area Bond Fund, a project of Civic, which aims to end the isolation and detainment of immigrants by ICE. The event takes place on Sunday, January 28th at 2:30 p.m. at Ashkenaz Center, 1317 San Pablo Avenue in Berkeley. Tickets will be available at the door or online at www.ashkenaz.com. For more information, call 510-525-5099.